It's time for What's Up with the Leader of the Opposition, Chris Hipkins.
Good morning, Chris Hipkins.
Yeah, g'day. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad. Now, let's start this morning with the cost of living. Yesterday we had the minimum wage rise from $23.15 to $23.50. Obviously, it's the first day of the new financial year, or second day. It was the first day yesterday. With the minimum wage increasing, it is the smallest increase in a decade. Do you believe this is sufficient to address the rising cost of living for low-income earners in Aotearoa? Because obviously, I think everyone at the moment is feeling the pinch from the cost of living.
Yeah, it definitely isn't. For 2 years in a row now, the government's increased the minimum wage by less than the rate of inflation. So what that means is, in real terms, your dollar, the money that you're earning, buys you less than it did 2 years ago. So you're actually going backwards. And I know that disproportionately that's going to affect a lot of younger people who are more likely to be doing part-time work, more likely to be earning the minimum wage. And then I think if you add that to the, you know, to the fact that they're also more likely to be renting, more likely to be facing the costs that are really still going up at the moment, I think it's a pretty tough time. You know, half-price public transport was one of the things that we did that was going to really help people in the younger demographic, and the current government scrapped that. You know, I think it's a pretty tough time to be on a low fixed income at the moment.
Yeah. Also, there's also the element of benefit increases in there as well. Currently, they're tied to the CPI, Consumer Price Index, but many argue that the CPI adjustments don't accurately reflect cost pressures. What would Labor consider as a different approach to benefit adjustments?
So when we were in government, we actually changed the formula for benefit adjustments so that it would be either the CPI or the Labour Cost Index, or it wasn't the Labour Cost Index, it was one of the indicators of how much people are actually being paid. So basically, if wages were going up at a rate faster than inflation, that's frankly a good thing because it means that people are actually being paid more relative to their costs, then benefits should go up by the same amount. And it meant that beneficiaries wouldn't continue to slip backwards. The current government came in and they immediately changed that so that it's now only a CPI adjustment. What does that mean in practice? It means that there are going to be thousands more New Zealand kids in benefit-dependent households who end up living below the poverty line.
Obviously, this is, you know, a fairly challenging issue to address, the cost of living, but are there any key things that Labor would try and tackle in the long term to increase stability and affordability for New Zealanders? What would those measures be? What would that look like?
I think we do have to make sure that we keep inflation back. Now that it's back within the sort of 1-3% target band, we do need to make sure we keep it there. But we also need to look at the areas where costs are continuing to increase for people, despite the fact that overall the headline rate of inflation has come down. So where are the areas that people are feeling it most? Rents are still going up, insurance is still going up, the cost of running a car is still going up. Some of these things are actually government, you know, policy decisions that are driving that. So the cost of running your car, for example, well, actually government decisions are making, you know, driving a car a lot more expensive. And right in the middle of a cost of living crisis, that's challenging, particularly when they've also cut subsidies for public transport. So I think if we want people to get out of their cars and into public transport, we've got to incentivise them to do that by making public transport cheaper. So I think there are a lot of things government can do. Make public transport cheaper, focus on reducing the costs that we can control to make life easier for people.
Now, obviously, one of the most visible places people quite often feel the pinch is at the supermarket. So Finance Minister Nicholas is eyeing some reform and a possible structural separation of New Zealand's supermarket duopoly. Labor has come out criticising the current government's approach to supermarket competition as a bit of lip service, but I guess given Labor's own history trying to deal with the issue, there hasn't been a lot of significant action from either party. What would you say needs to happen in the sector?
Well, we did a lot of work in government to generate an evidence base for further action, and the previous national opposition criticised us, saying we hadn't done enough. Well, over the last year and a half, they haven't really done anything at all. I think the fact that Nicola Willis is now asking for more information, well, sure, that's a good thing. But I've also said to her, we do need to get on with it. If her problem is that she can't get the ACT Party to support reform of supermarket competition, which David Semple's been pretty clear publicly he doesn't support, my message to her has been come talk to us, because I think it needs to happen. And if a national party needs us to give them the numbers to make it happen, then we will.
What are the key things government can do to bring down grocery prices for Kiwis?
Well, more competition in the supermarket sector would be a damn good start. And, you know, that means it doesn't just mean more supermarkets. It also means looking at the way the wholesale system works. Because even if you're opening a new supermarket, if you're still having to buy off the two major wholesalers now, that's not going to necessarily help the overall price that you're paying at the checkout. So I think we do need to see a lot more competition there.
Hmm. Now, just moving along to big infrastructure projects that are looking like they're about to roll out, we're talking about the ferry, the Inter-Islander ferry, and the scrapping of the IREX project, which kind of came to fruition. It was about to come to fruition under the Labor government, but the National government subsequently scrapped. And Peters has been in the media saying they've got a new plan. They're going to do it cheaper by getting two shorter ferries. And rather than completely overhauling both ports, they're just going to give them a bit of a refurb. How do you assess the new plan?
Well, the new plan looks awfully like the old plan, with some of the costs cut. And you've got to ask your question, the question of whether the cost cutting they're doing is in New Zealand's long-term best interest.
Mm. They're saying 30 years, right? They're going to get 30 years out of it, which to me, I reckon we probably need to be thinking a bit longer than just 30 years.
Well, I think they're making some big assumptions about climate change there which aren't borne out by evidence. Mm. So one of the parts of the IREX project that they've cancelled was raising the wharves and terminals up so that they could cope with more extreme weather events and rising sea levels. They've decided not to do that. So what does that actually mean? It means when we do get our new ferries, they're probably going to end up being disrupted more often by extreme weather events like cyclones and flooding. I think they're not future-proofing here. They're not saying we've got a responsibility to the next generation of New Zealanders to make sure we're leaving them with infrastructure that's fit for purpose. I mean, if you look at those wharves now, we inherited those from previous generations of New Zealanders who saw that as a public investment. They were publicly funded. They were a public investment. And now we're saying, oh, yeah, but we don't have a responsibility to hand that on to the next generation in at least as good, if not a better state than what we got. And I think they're wrong on that. I think we do have that responsibility.
Mm. Now, the original decision was for two larger ferries, and there has been discussion that this was apparently a mistake. How does your government, I guess part of that equation was the cost had increased from the project from $775 million to nearly $3 billion. I mean, how could Labor justify sticking with that plan of increased costs?
Well, we weren't. I mean, we'd already said to Kiwi Rail we weren't going to continue to put more money into it. Ultimately, what they've come up with now is probably going to end up costing more than if they'd finished IREX, though, because they're having to spend over $1 billion already in termination costs for the old projects and in propping up the existing ferries to operate for three more years. We would have had new ferries sailing the Cook Strait next year if they hadn't made their knee-jerk decision to cancel the ones that had already been ordered. They had started to make them over in Korea when they got a text message from the government saying that they were being cancelled.
Yes. Well, looking back, how would you have handled the procurement process differently to avoid the current situation? And what lessons has Labor learned from the experience?
I mean, I think Winston Peters' decision to buy the two mega ferries in the first place probably needed to be revised. I mean, IREX was his baby. You know, he came up with it in the first place during our first term in government. And probably we should have probed a bit more the two big ferries and whether just two more medium-sized ferries would have been a better option for the Cook Strait. You know, we went with Winston Peters' recommendation.
Now, moving along to the Treaty Principles Bill, in the news this morning, Christopher Luxon has come out saying that they are going to exclude thousands of submissions from the parliamentary record on the Treaty Principles Bill. What is Labor's stance on this decision?
Well, they said they wanted to have a national conversation and they wanted people to have the opportunity to have their say, and now they're saying they're going to ignore people who made submissions. I think that's wrong. I think at the very least, they should be releasing all of the submissions so that people can see what their fellow New Zealanders had to say about it. And I don't necessarily buy the fact that they don't have time to analyse them. Actually, there's plenty of tools available now. You could even use an AI digital tool to analyse all the submissions and get a pretty punchy response pretty quickly.
Yes. How concerned are you that excluding these submissions could somewhat undermine public trust in the legislative process?
Oh, I mean, I think having said to people that you want them to make submissions, to then ignore their submissions, I think will undermine trust in the public process, you know, public lawmaking process. I think, you know, at the very least, they should be able to tell people how many of the submitters were in favour and how many people were opposed.
Yeah, totally, I think. Okay, so as it stands, with them excluding it, do they just put them in a paper shredder or just delete, or do they sit somewhere for people to access at a future date?
Well, I think at the very least they need to make sure they're publicly available so that, you know, if someone in future wants to go through and do an analysis of them.
Oh, totally. What a great historic record, you know, just capture that sentiment and see what the heck is happening in Aotearoa at that time in history. All right. Hey, Christopher, Chris Hipkins, thank you so much for chatting to us this morning. We'll look forward to speaking with you in a couple of weeks' time.
Good as gold. No worries. Good to talk to you.
Cheers, mate.
That was What's Up with Leader of the Opposition, Chris Hipkins.